Okie dokie. Let's get right to it. Welcome back to Coven Sovereign, everyone. We have a spooky episode for you today. We are going to be talking about haunted undergrounds, which there are actually two specifically that we're going to be talking about. The first one is, I mostly chose it because it's about a witch, the Witch of Wookiee Hole. And I'm sorry if I'm not saying that right, because it is a place in the UK. W-O-O-K-E-Y, Wookiee Hole. I hope that's how you say it. If not, I apologize to all of my UK listeners. I'm probably gonna butcher your shit often, so. So we're going to talk about that one. And I have an article that Gwion Raven wrote. Actually this year in 2019, so that's mostly where I will be pulling from, and then of course a little bit of Wikipedia as well. And then the other underground that we are going to talk about is the Seattle Underground, which I am really excited to talk about, because if you don't know about the Seattle Underground, boy is it cool. Like, legit super interesting. So let's get right into it, starting with the Witch of Wookiee Hole. We have a little bit of history, a little bit of archaeology, and a little bit of lore here. And I wasn't able to find too much about, like, the underground, the cave itself. It's mostly about the witch, so yeah. So a little funny tidbit that I found. So there was this article referencing a gentleman by the name of Whitcomb, and the article goes as such. Whitcomb suggests that the name Wookiee is derived from the Celtic Welsh for cave. Ogo, or Ogoff, which gave the early names for this cave of Oki or Aki, Hole, is Anglo-Saxon for cave, which is itself of Latin derivation. Therefore, the name Wookiee Hole Cave basically means cave, cave, cave. Which I just thought was amazing. Fossils of a range of animals have been found, including the Pleistocene lion, the cave hyena, and the badger. Wookiee Hole was occupied by humans in the Iron Age, possibly around 250 to 300 BC, while nearby Hyena Cave was occupied by Stone Age hunters. Badger Hole and Rhinoceros Hole are two drive caves on the slopes above the Wookiee Ravine near the Wookiee Hole Resurgence. Just outside the cave, the foundations of a first century hut have been identified. These had been built on during the Roman era up to the end of the 4th century. So this is a very, very old story, guys, if you're not getting that yet. So, who is the Witch of Wookiee Hole? The legend has multiple versions, but one of them goes a little something like this. A long, 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 long time ago, a witch was jilted by a would-be suitor. She was distraught and full of vindictive spirit, as was her right. So the witch cursed anyone that fell in love in the town. The abbot of Glastonbury sent a brave monk to dispatch the Witch of Wookiee Hole, because as people are wont to do, they get upset when witches actually buck up, like they don't think they're gonna. So he sent this monk, and the monk chased her through the gorge and into the caves, and the witch hid in the shadows. And when the monk came upon her, she leaped out, screaming curses and assailing him with spells. The monk sprinkled the witch with water from the river Axe, and she was instantly turned to stone. And she remains in her rocky tomb and Wookiee hole to this very day. So that is a little bit of the lore and the story. And this is a little bit more of the present day, trying to figure out, was there a witch of Wookiee hole? If there was, who is she? Who was she? So we have a gentleman by the name of Herbert Bock, who is an archaeologist and an avid cave explorer. He discovered the skeleton of a woman, and testing shown that she had lain in the caves of Wookiee Hole for some 1,000 years. Placed beside her were the remains of goat bones, a dagger, and a polished stone ball. Sounds pretty fucking witchy to me. So, of course, the discovery of the skeleton with all of her witchy accessories kind of only helped to add fuel to the fire of the local lore of the Wookiee Hole Witch. Over the years, several unsuccessful attempts to move the witch back to Wookiee Hole have been undertaken. For now, in the foreseeable future, the witch will remain on display at the nearby Wells and Mindip Museum in Wells, Somerset. That would actually be really cool to go see that. Hey, if you live in Wells, Somerset, go to the Wells and Mindip Museum and go see the Witch of Wookiee Hole. I'm like telling a local to go do something that they've probably already done. However, are these the remains of the real Witch of Wookiee Hole? If the legend is true, the bones that Mr. Bock discovered are not the Witch of Wookiee Hole at all, but rather a Romano-British goat herder. The real witch was turned to stone, and you can see her for yourself in the cave known as the Witch's Kitchen. The Stone Witch is a stalagmite made of limestone, and stalagmites form when limestone deposits with other minerals drip from the ceilings of caves, and they create mounds on the cave floor. So, and the Witch's Kitchen is the third of nearly 25 discovered chambers of caves found at Wookiee Hole, and is near the entrance to the cave complex. The first three chambers show human activity from 45,000 years ago. Bro, that is so fucking cool. Like that you can just go into a cave and literally just go thousands of years back into time. Like that's just, ugh, it's so fucking cool. Sorry, I'm a huge nerd, guys. Anyways, was that the witch? Probably not. Probably a goat herder. But because I believe in magic and it is the spooky season and god damn it, we deserve a little fantasy now and then, I'm going to say that it was the witch that they found with her dagger and her crystal and her goat bones. I mean, seriously, like, how could that not have been? I mean, even if it was a goat herder, I mean, come on, you crystal, a dagger, and goat bone, like, it's a witch goat herder, like, fuck. So I know that wasn't a lot, because it was actually really hard to find stuff about the Wookiee Hole, but next is the Seattle Underground. So, what is the Seattle Underground? It is a network of technically underground passageways and basements in downtown Pioneer Square, Seattle, Washington, United States. They were at ground level when the city was built in the mid-19th century. After the streets were elevated, these spaces fell into disuse, but they have become a tourist attraction in the recent decades. So that they are what is now known as the Seattle Underground, which was built, basically the city rebuilt itself on top of itself after the Great Seattle Fire of 1889. So a little bit of history for you. And this is mostly from Wikipedia, just an FYI. Seattle's first buildings were wooden. And on June 6, 1889, a cabinet maker accidentally overturned and ignited a glue pot. And in an attempt to extinguish it with water, therefore spread the burning grease-based glue. So, grease-based glue was on fire. That's exciting. The fire chief just so happened to be out of town, and although the volunteer fire department responded, they made the mistake of trying to use too many hoses at once. It's just like, can you just imagine, like, the black and white with the piano, and then da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's just like they're trying to desperately just pull out fire hoses while this fucking grease glue fire just rages in the background. Oh, shit. Sorry. Okay, so they were trying to use too many hoses. Been there, done that, girlfriend. When the subsequent drop in water pressure, none of the hoses were affected, and the Great Seattle Fire destroyed 31 blocks. You fucking guys. Imagine burning down an entire city because you spilled your glue pot. Oh, God. What was this dude's name? Cabinet maker Jonathan Edward Back. Oh, honey. Listen, the descendants of Jonathan Edward Back, I am sorry, because your ancestor was an idiot. He burned down a fucking city. Okay, so, funnily enough, this was not the first destructive fire for Seattle or of its time. So instead of rebuilding the city as it was before, city leaders decided to make two very strategic decisions here. The first being that all new buildings must be of stone or brick as insurance against a similar disaster due to, you know, wood. And secondly, that the streets should be regraded 1 to 2 stories higher than the original street grade. Pioneer Square had originally been built mostly on filled in tidelands, so as a consequence, it often flooded. Basically just the entire fucking town in 6 inches of water. So raising the streets to the new desired level, about 12 feet higher than before, and in some places 30 feet higher than before, would be very beneficial. So how the fuck did they do that? How did they literally raise an entire city 12 feet to 30 feet into the air? Well, at first, pedestrians climbed ladders to go between street level and the sidewalks in front of building entrances. Can you imagine? Brick archways were constructed next to the road surface above the submerged sidewalks. Pavement lights, which was a form of like walk-on skylight with small panes of clear glass, were installed over the gap from the raised street in the building, creating the area now called the Seattle Underground. And when they reconstructed their buildings, merchants and landlords knew that the ground floor would eventually be underground, and the next floor up would be the new ground floor. So there's very little decoration on the doors and windows of the original ground floor, but extensive decoration on the new ground floor. And also, just as an FYI, I will be posting pictures of both the Wookiee Hole Cave and the Seattle Underground on my Instagram and my Facebook. So if you guys want to see what the fuck I'm talking about, that's where you can go. Anyways, once the new sidewalks were complete, building owners moved their businesses to the new ground floor, and although merchants carried on business in the lowest floors of buildings that survived the fires, and pedestrians continued to use the underground sidewalks lit by the pavement lights embedded in the grade level sidewalk above. Which, like, can you imagine how crazy that would be to have, like, two different cities, like, two different levels in your city? I know there's subways and shit, but like, you're not walking to a different like level of your city when you go into a subway. You're taking a straight shot through a tunnel, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's different, but I don't know, it's just really fucking cool to think about being alive during that time. Like, can you imagine having to like climb down ladders to use your sidewalks because your city is being raised 12 feet into the air? Like, That's so wild. Okay, let's see. In 1907, the city condemned the underground for fear of bubonic plague, 2 years before the 1909 World Fair in Seattle. The basements were left to deteriorate or were used as storage. Some became illegal flop houses for the homeless, gambling halls, speakeasies, and opium dens, so you know where I would have been. Only a small portion of the Seattle Underground has been restored and made safe and accessible to the public on guided tours. And yes, you can still take these guided tours today, guys, which I really fucking want to, like, I really want to see this shit because it's just so cool. In 1965, local citizen Bill Spiedel, I'm sorry, I'm not sure, established Bill Spiedel's Underground Tour, which still operates to this day. So I found this blog where a woman had taken a tour, and it was really the only haunted info I could find. Okay, so let's see. So when I was looking for, like, what was haunted about the underground, the Seattle Underground, right? This is what popped up. There's a couple of different spirits and hauntings. There's this place in the Bill Spiedel tour that is the teller cage, and it's the teller cage of the old bank, because it used to be the first floor, right? And now it's under the city. So there's a big ass teller cage down there. The bank was open 24 hours a day, and it was meant specifically for prospectors working the Klondike gold rush to be able to trade their gold for cash as soon as they arrived in Seattle, no matter what time of day or night it happened to be. And today, it is said to be one of the most haunted sections of the underground tunnel system. So, who exactly is haunting it? Well, there's Edward. And we know he called himself that because he's told us himself. A number of EVPs have taken in the area have documented what seems to be a disembodied voice answering the questions, "Who are you?" and "What's your name?" with the word Edward, and occasionally Eddie. In the 1980s, one tour guide reportedly spotted an apparition believed to be Edward. He was apparently a tall man wearing suspenders and sporting an impressive handlebar mustache. Even when you're dead, you gotta keep that style. He's thought to have been a bank teller who was shot and killed on duty, although it's worth noting that it's not really been checked if that is a true event or not. So, you know, keep that in mind. There has also been stories of the ghost of a woman who's said to haunt the area. She's said to have been murdered behind the vault, although few details seem to be available about the story. Additionally, cold spots have been reported in the area, and photographs taken will sometimes display orbs. So another area that's known for being haunted is the Oriental Hotel, which the name of probably wouldn't fly today, but it was apparently a popular hangout for the, quote, seamstresses, quote, of Seattle, and might still be today if they're still hanging out. Also, just an FYI, the seamstresses was kind of a code word for lady of the night, if you catch my drift. You might say a woman of wanton desires. Sometimes the shadowy, why is that so hard? The outlines of the silhouettes of women can be seen walking the area, and odd noises paired with telling EVPs have sometimes occurred. A loud bang, which turned out to be a trash can being kicked, and an EVP seeming to say, "I kicked the can," for example. Gotta love a considerate ghost that lets you know what's up, you know? And there are also other tales, too. Just to name a few, a woman in white who wanders a particular area of the tunnels, and a face seen in a window in the first section of the underground you're taken to on Bill Speeder's tour. There was also a little glimpse of a couple who were photobombed by a woman in Victorian-era clothing. And so on and so forth, as little hauntings are tend to do, orbs, noises, voices, etc., etc. Either way, it's a really fucking cool place, and it's just creepy as shit. I mean, it like it's so creepy to be in a abandoned, used to be a city, underground, an actual city that people have possibly died in. Like, it's just very unsettling, and I still want to fucking do it. So, hashtag, where all my creepy bitches at? Hey. I'm sorry that if this was not as spooky as you would like. I'm in a really good giggly mood, so it was kind of hard for me to be too spoops. I'm sorry. But the next episode, which I'm going to try to post on Halloween, is going to be another Sovereign Ladies episode. But, plot twist, the Sovereign Ladies are actually vengeful women who were fucking betrayed or done wrong and died and came back as a boss bitch. Like, you gonna kill me? Oh, you finna kill me? Oh, okay. And now they out here snatching up people's children or killing men or throwing people off of bridges. So that's what Halloween's episode is finna be about. And I'm actually really excited about it. And I'm pretty sure that one of my Sovereign Ladies is going to be La Llorona. And I hope I'm fucking saying that right. Two double L is a yeah, La Llorona. I think that's how you say it. I'm sorry. I'm a very white person. I try my best. anyways, thanks for listening, guys. You the real MVPs. I love you.